Welcome to Minute 8 of Season 12 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcasting Network. Welcome back once again, Nick.
Thank you for having me back, Rob. I appreciate it.
All right, just sit.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So, minute 8 begins with Red waiting patiently and ends with Red starting to climb the stairs into the courtyard. So, we left things yesterday with Red entering a room with 5 men and just standing there at attention, waiting for someone to acknowledge the fact that he's there. And then the parole board head says to him, "Sit." And you know, you could see that he's acting very awkward here. You know, he does not feel comfortable for a second that he's here, which sort of makes sense.
I always got the feeling that he's not comfortable, but there's also an earnestness about it too. Like, he's not really being himself. It's as if he has to change himself to be what they think they want him to be. Like, that's the energy I get from him, like, standing in that room.
I can hear that. I'm looking at it also from the perspective that he doesn't have high expectations of what's going to happen here, so he just wants to get this over with already, and that's it, to move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's also part of it, because, I mean, we see Red throughout this entire movie, and he's usually pretty confident, especially when he's in the Shawshank environment. You know, obviously towards the end of the movie, when we see him outside of the Shawshank environment, that's where he starts losing it a little bit, but that just because of the whole idea of being an institutional man.
Mm-hmm.
But inside, he is he's completely comfortable here. I mean, again, he's been here for 20 years, which we're about to find out. So, you know, 20 years is a long time to make it through a place like this and say to yourself, all right, I'm feeling good about where I am and what I'm doing. And for what I do all the time, that type of thing.
Mm. Yeah.
So I do like that. I like the way that they show that to him. I think it's very interesting from that perspective. At this point, he uncomfortably, I guess, sits down and looks over at the men that are sitting across from him. Also very intimidating that you have these 5 men sitting here making this making these types of decisions for him. And the parole board head says, "We see by your file, you've served 20 years of a life sentence." And Reddy goes, "Yes, sir." "Do you feel you've been rehabilitated?" "Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely, sir. I mean, I learned my lesson." Now, first of all, the way that he asks this question, he says, "We see by your file," which already is saying to him that, you know, you're not a person. You're just a piece of paper.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a distance and there's a lack of understanding and really even knowing. It's like, okay, so this says this. What do you think? And it's like, well, how am I supposed to answer that? Like, what do I need to dance around and give you the answer that you're looking for? Or do you genuinely care? And they clearly don't care. It almost feels like their minds are already made up, similar to, assumedly, like the jury and judge that we saw just minutes, or I guess a minute or two prior, seconds really,
well, that was
to
yesterday.
This scene. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. No, for sure. Everyone is, it's funny. They describe Andy as cold and icy, but they're all acting in cold and icy ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
it's
very
the,
much so.
It's the, was it the pot calling the kettle black?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you would expect, yeah, exactly. How they are acting is not at all how Morgan Freeman's character is acting, how Tim Robbins' character. They're very much on their heels. They're definitely, you know, taking it back and on the defensive, whereas, you know, this panel of 5 people and the judge and the DA, for that matter, they're very much on the offensive and drilling in and being like, this is who you are, this is what you've done, this and this. And they're just like, I guess, like, maybe, I don't know. Even Morgan Freeman kind of, you know, shifts his answer to be like, yeah, I feel rehabilitated. I'm sorry for what, or I've learned from my mistake. And it's like, well, which answer, you know what I mean? Like, which one did you want to stick with, or which one did you mean? Are you just trying to appease? And then that casts doubt on that panel of people. And like I said, they've already made up their minds. So this is all just kind of, you know, for show.
Yeah. He basically is wasting his time here. And they're also wasting their time because they could just, without just meeting him, just, let's check off the box and that's it. We don't need to keep going
There,
through that.
that's lunch.
That's right. I mean, he basically says, I learned my lesson. And, as he's saying that, the camera then starts zooming in on him, on his face. It, like, frames him really well as he's talking. And like you said before, he's not as comfortable with what he's saying here because he doesn't believe what he's saying. I think that's what it is. Because he goes, I can honestly say I'm a changed man. And what the hell does that mean? Like, how do you have to explain yourself. And he's not explaining himself here.
Yeah. And if you talk about being a changed man, what aspects are you supposed to talk about? I don't have as much of a temper, assuming here. I don't, do this. I don't do that. I don't feel this anymore. Like, are they looking for something? Are you supposed to just be honest? Like, how does a question like that even work? And it's a bummer. And we can kind of see that disappointment almost in his face as the scene progresses and as the camera just kind of very slowly and casually just comes up that much closer, so we get more of an understanding and a glimpse of who Morgan Freeman is and
That's
as this character.
right. Now, did you see his eyes? Did you watch his eyes when the camera's zooming in?
He's kind of moving back and forth, and to me, he's like trying to make eye contact with everybody on that panel. But I feel like every time he looks at somebody, he like immediately looks away because, or even down because there's like a weird maybe disapproval, or he already feels like they're not paying attention or their mind is made up. Like he's figuring that out in real time as he's looking at everybody.
Okay, see, I noticed something different. To me, it seems as if he's not looking at them. He's looking away to the side. There are people who say that, you can tell if someone's lying by their eye movement. When they're looking away when they're saying something. So if again, I'm far from being an expert on that subject. I don't know very much about it. But if that is true, that you can tell a person is lying by the way that their eyes will move back and forth or away from the stuff. I mean, again, he's clearly lying here. He's either lying to them or he's lying to himself.
Or both.
Well, no, if he's lying to himself, then he's not lying to them because he's using a misconception on his, on what he's thinking.
Okay.
That type of thing. But again, he's clearly lying here somewhere. It's just a question of to who or to whom
Yeah. Yeah.
he's lying. But I like it because this is one of the few moments in the movie where you see Red seemingly flustered and I guess nervous about something. So yeah, I again, I'm not really sure how that completely works, but I like the way that they show that. And then he says,
Yeah.
"I'm no longer a danger to society." And he goes, "That's God's honest truth." Now that they don't mention it in the movie. And I understand why it doesn't need to be brought up. It is extraneous. But in the book, they talk about the fact that what crime did he commit? He killed his wife by cutting the brake line in their car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's more than premeditated. That's very meditated.
That's right. When you know that information about Red, that also changes the way you look at Red.
Yeah, I would agree with that because that's very much like it's planned, it's calculated, it's going in some type of sequence of events. It's also just having control and knowing the outcome before the game already starts. So for the shoe to be on the other foot in this case, like that's also kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting way to look at things. Something about Red, in the book, obviously not in the not in the movie itself, because as we just said, when you hear about this, it changes your perception of Red. But if you don't know what he did, and you know that he's there for murder, that's all they say. Actually,
Right.
they didn't even say that. They just say, you're served 20 years of a life sentence. It could be that. Theoretically, it could be they did something else.
Yeah, but I feel like you don't hear about getting a life sentence for, much other stuff.
It's true. So in the book itself, I want to read the paragraph that explains what he did. This is actually on page two. It's right, it's right at the beginning. And what he basically says here is, I came to Shawshank when I was just 20. And I'm one of the few people in our happy little family who is willing to own up to what he did. I committed murder. I put a large insurance policy on my wife, who was 3 years older than I. that 3 years older than I was, and then I fixed the brakes of the Chevrolet coupe her father had given us as a wedding present. It worked out exactly as I had planned, except I hadn't planned on her stopping to pick up the neighbor's woman and the neighbor woman's infant son on the way down to Castle Hill and into town. The brakes let go, and the car crashed through the bushes at the edge of the town common, gathering speed. Bystanders said it must have been doing 50 or better when it hit the base of the Civil War statue and burst into flames. I also hadn't planned on getting caught, but caught I was. I got a season's pass into this place. Maine has no death penalty. But the district attorney saw to it that I was tried for all three deaths and given three life sentences to run one after the other. That fixed up any chance of parole I might have for a long, long time. The judge called what I had done a hideous, heinous crime, and it was. But it was also in the past now. You could look it up in the yellowing files of the Castle Rock Call, where the big headlines announcing my conviction took sort of a funny and antique look, sort of funny and antique next to the news of Hitler and Mussolini and FDR's alphabet soup agency. So interesting, the way that it talks about that. Again, it changes so much about him. Now, I mean, you know that Red in the book is also not a black man.
I did not.
He's an Irish guy
Okay.
with apparently was a sandy red hair. And they originally wanted Robert Redford to play this character.
Okay. I can kind of see that maybe, but I don't know. I feel like this might sound kind of weird, but I feel like Redford would be like too cool. Like he would be too Robert Redford in the role. Like with Morgan Freeman, like he to me, like he becomes that character. Like he is Ellis. And I feel like if it was Robert Redford, I'd be like, oh, it's Robert Redford, like kind of running this prison kind of thing. And I don't think it would have the same impact and feel. It would feel more Hollywood than what the movie
Right.
does.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. But again, this is the whoever came up with the idea of trying to cast Morgan Freeman in the role of an Irish con was a genius. There's no question about that because he's so perfect here.
Yeah, it's great casting.
We just see the look on his face after he says this. And he himself doesn't believe it either. And then they show us a picture of apparently what he looked like when he was incarcerated 20 years earlier. So we see a picture of a black man with a board around his neck that says Shawshank State Prison, and then his number, and it says June 1st, 1927. This is actually a picture of Morgan Freeman's son,
Huh, okay.
who we will see a little bit later, because he's also one of the cons. I believe we'll talk about him next week. He's one of the cons who is a fresh fish con. They gave him a little part in the movie also.
That's kind of fun.
It makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally.
So they mentioned the day of June 1st, 1927. Do you know of anything that might have happened on that day?
Nothing's jumping out at me
Okay.
now.
So have you ever heard of Lizzie Borden?
I have heard of Lizzie Borden,
Okay,
yes.
she was tried and acquitted for the axe murders of her parents, her father and stepmother. And she died on that day. She died on June 1st, 1927.
What? That's pretty wild.
And in Canada, they stopped prohibition on that day also. It became legal in Canada to
Oh.
for liquor sales.
To imbibe again. Interesting.
Yeah, in Ontario, sorry. And therefore, a lot of Americans would go to Ontario to go buy it.
Makes sense, as they would.
That's right. So yeah, it just I just thought it was really interesting that this is the day that Lizzie Borden died.
Now, do you think they picked that day because of that, or they just picked a random
I
day?
believe it.
Maybe not because of Lizzie Borden specifically, but
I believe they just picked a random day.
fair enough.
I don't think that it mentions in the book the exact day that that he did it. So actually, here I just found that in the book, her name is Linda. Miss, we talked the other day about Mrs. Andy Dufresne, or Andy Dufresne's wife, and in the book, her name is Linda.
Okay. Well, that is a nice name. Linda Dufresne.
That's right, Linda Collins Dufresne, and
Oh.
yeah. So the but it doesn't say anything here about when Red committed his crime. So nope, no way of knowing. Then we see a hand stamp something on it on the page, and we see it says rejected, and we see his name typed out. It's Ellis Boyd Redding, and it has the number, and the determination here is rejected. They decided not to give him parole. Why am I shocked? Or why am I not shocked? Lack of a better phrase. The shot changes, and we see a guard opening up a door to the outside. And Red walks out, puts his hat back on his head, and just looks out at everything going on, taking in the place that he has spent the last 20 years of his life. And as far as he knows, he's going to be spending the rest of his life there. And he walks to a flight of stairs and begins to climb up those flight of stairs to possibly go visit some other inmates that are there. Who knows?
And the camera just kind of like the rest of the film so far, it just kind of sweeps
That's right.
along with him, like nice and even just taking its time with him as he just kind of looks up at the sky and is like, yep. And then keeps on
That's
keeping
right.
on.
Is there anything else that you wanted to say about this minute?
No, nothing's
All
jumping out at me.
right, excellent. So today's segment is called Midweek Morgan. Very fittingly, since we just had an entire minute just watching Morgan Freeman, Nick, would you like to give us your top five Morgan Freeman performances?
Absolutely. Number five, him in The Dark Knight. Number four, his role in Glory. Number three, him up beside Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven. Number two, the one that actually introduced me to Morgan Freeman, Seven. And number one, I really think it's the eyebrows that does a lot of the heavy lifting for him, but Dreamcatcher, another Stephen King adaptation, Dreamcatcher.
Interesting. Now, I mean, first of all, I find it very interesting that you didn't put Shawshank on this list.
I thought about it, and I probably should have, but I kind of wanted to, I guess, exclude this one just because we're going to be talking about it, or I guess you're going to be talking about it a whole lot more than I, but it's going to be talked about and discussed, so I wanted to
Okay,
exclude it.
that's fair. Sometimes my guests believe that they can't use it, as one of their choices, but feel free. Feel free to not use it. As opposed to thinking that you're not allowed to. That type of thing. And
Fair.
yeah, but that is a great list. I mean, he's a very solid actor. He's definitely an actor that most directors can definitely rely on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like with Morgan Freeman, for the most part, you know what you're going to get when you bring him onto a project. You're there to bring him in for a certain type of energy and a certain type of character, and he's
That's
going to
true.
deliver on that.
Now we will play the daily game of Name That Book Adaptation. So we're going to spin the wheel and see what you get. This is a movie from 2021, and the
Okay.
original name of the novel that it's based on is called The Player.
The player?
Not the one with Tim Robbins.
Okay. I don't know if my gut reaction for some reason is to say Molly's Game, but I don't think that came out in
No, but Molly's
2021.
Game was called Molly's Game, so that's it's not. It's
Okay,
not
so that
Molly's Game.
was just.
Nice try on that one, but no.
And this is 2021, so like 5 years
That's
ago
right. 5 years
ish.
ago. Would you like a hint? Do you want to know the name of the lead actor? Do you want to know the name of the director?
Ooh, I feel like let's go actor.
Well, let's go director first.
Okay,
Sean
I'll do
Levy.
that too. Sean, now I'm trying to think of what he's done. Well, I know he didn't do Molly's Game. That
There
was Aaron
you go.
Sorkin, so. Oh,
Do you want to know the name of the lead actor?
Yes, please.
Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, this is the one where he's like the character. Or was it? Yeah, that was Ryan Reynolds in that one. Where he is like the video game character.
So what's the name of that movie?
Oh, man. Was a video game guy. He's running around. Because first he's an NPC, and I think he worked at a bank or something, and then he's not anymore.
That's right.
Oh, man. I keep wanting to say no because that's Ryan Reynolds or Ryan Gosling. Ryan Reynolds, NPC. Oh, gosh. Why can't I think of that one? I'm going to feel really dumb when I hear
The
it.
character's name is Guy.
Free guy.
There you go.
Oh, man. I did so well last. I did so well yesterday.
All right, well, the games are not over yet. You're still gonna have three
That is
choices for
true.
high low today, so you might
That is true.
you might get something there. All right, so now we will play the second game today of high low. Spin the wheel and see what you got. The 1996 film Shine with Jeffrey Rush.
Shine. Okay. Let's go for IMDb. We're gonna play it safe again, and I'm gonna say a 7.2 because it's Jeffrey Rush. It might have been a critical darling. 96. Let's say 86%.
It is a 7.6 and a 91%.
Okay. So we're in the ballpark.
Right, let's spin the wheel for the next one. Okay, the 1976 film Network.
Oh, okay. So network. Let's go an 8.9 on IMDb, and that's got to be a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
You overshot both of them. It's an 8.1 and a 92%.
Okay. So loving it more
Right.
than
I just want to
that.
remind
Okay.
everyone listening that these numbers are as of the day that I did the research before I started recording, the season. So it is possible that some of the answers might have moved slightly. Maybe the IMDb numbers, but not the Rotten Tomato numbers are probably going to stay the same. What I would think.
Yeah. It'd be funny if the ones where I was off by one, like it's now
That's
changed.
right.
And the 82 I got right, not right anymore.
All right, and let's spin the wheel for the final time today. For your third choice. Okay, the 2009 film Avatar.
Ooh, that's... Okay. I feel like as much as it's loved, I don't think it's. I'm gonna go. All right, use your words, Nick. I think for IMDb, I'm gonna say 7.8, and for Rotten Tomatoes, I think we're at like a 95.
Well, first of all, on IMDb, you are off by one at 7.9. Okay, and it has an 82% on Rotten Tomato.
Really? I thought it would have been a little bit
There are a
more.
lot of haters of Avatar out there.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. I just kind of assumed with the technological advancements at the time and kind of the big, to do around it, but I guess if it's got haters, it's got haters.
That is true. All right, so Nick, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Nick Rehak?
Absolutely. You can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. There's a program I'm on with Bubba Wheat called Lyrical Innuendo. We're talking about songs and their lyrics. And there's another one called Play MST for Me. That's with Jason Soto. We're watching every single episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and I'm having a lot of fun doing so. So check those out, rabbitholepodcasts.com.
Well, the fact that you're having fun doing it is great. I always love hearing that. It makes a lot of sense. Facebook, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can send me an email at movearoundminute@movearound.net. And if you want to check out my website, movearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.